book study. I do want to mention to let all of you know kind of how this is going to go so you get a feel for it and know what to do. I would suggest if you're going to have questions, we will have at least up to an hour, depending on how long the step is, the essay is that we're studying. Some of them are longer than others. I can tell you that the 12th step will take probably 3 sessions because it's very long, with very comprehensive, wonderfully comprehensive. So I'm going to talk at least up to an hour, whether we're through with that essay or not, and have to continue it the next week. And then we will open for questions if anybody has questions, but we request that the questions be about the step we're studying. In other words, any other questions, there won't be an after meeting for this meeting. So questions about what the study was about. And I will occasionally mention 2 others of our original early basic literature. If something from there, a little highlight from there, will point up what I'm saying or what I'm reading in the 12 and 12. And if you want to have those books handy, you won't need to be with, but that is the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and the little book called As Bill Sees It, because there are one-page excerpts all through that. And some of them really have, some of the pages really have a lot of support for whatever we may be reading at any given point. So you might want to have those as well as your 12 and 12 handy. And one other book that I will not quote from, but I always recommend every, is this little booklet, Living Sober. Interestingly enough, this book was not printed till I was already either 4 years or working on my 4th year of sobriety. And I, by the time it came out, I had my 3 books that worked for me. And so, but I have come in the last year or so to really appreciate and love this book. It's geared toward newcomers. And it has little short, it'll give a question or a topic, and it'll give a little short, some of them are a couple of pages, but most of them are like a page and a half, discussion and suggestions, great suggestions for newcomers. And by the way, there are a couple of the sections in here that I've read so far already that are really good. I don't care how long you're sober. I made a note of a couple of them that are good for review, even with my 53 years of sobriety. They're good to go back and look at and say, yeah, it's good to be reminded of that. So this is a wonderful book. I recommend this to anybody new. I've really come to love it very much. So starting out, we're going to start now with our 12 and 12. And I'll tell you, there is I have an older one, so there, I think there's more in the newer ones. I think there's an introduction and a preface and stuff. I am not going to read those, but I recommend if you're interested that you read those for yourself. It gives a general overall about the book. I don't think that there's anything in there that we need to go over other than just reading it, and you guys can do that on your own. So, and one of the things I have come recently to enjoy doing, on page 5 in the 12 steps and 12, well, my old one has no more paper cover on it anymore, but if anyone doesn't know what that looks like, it looks like this. That's the cover that's been on it for years, right? Mm-hmm. And if anyone doesn't have the money to buy one and doesn't have one yet, in the free mobile app called Everything AA, the 12 and 12 is there in 2 formats. Number 1, you can read it. Or number 2, there are recordings of someone having recorded it, and you can listen to it read to you. So that's really an excellent app to have. So if you want to follow. So one of the things I like to do on page 5, there's a little kind of a introductory blurb for each step and tradition. And I like to read it. Gives us a little clue of what we're going to be looking at as we get into the step. So starting with step 1 there, the little introduction, it says, step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. So who cares to admit complete defeat? That's actually the question that opens that step. And it's just such a great question to suck you upside the head with a good hard truth right away, right? Who wants to say, I'm defeated. I can't do it. I can't do anything. Nobody likes to. Then it says, admission of powerlessness is the first step in liberation. Relation of humility to sobriety, important. Mental obsession plus physical allergy, and why must every AA hit bottom? We're going to talk a bunch about that too. So now we want to go over to page 21, where this step actually starts. Whoops, I'm on the wrong page. Page 21, here we are. All right, I won't read the, well, I will read it again. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. So here's that question. Who cares to admit complete defeat? Practically no one, of course. Every natural instinct cries out against the idea of personal powerlessness. It is truly awful to admit that, glass in hand, we have warped our minds into such an obsession for destructive drinking that only an act of providence can remove it from us. No other kind of bankruptcy is like this one. Alcohol now become the rapacious creditor. Rapacious, if anybody doesn't know, means, if I go off the top of my head, it means it's very lethal, very lethal, very much after you. You know, very, very hard to get away. A predator, yes. Rapacious creditor, they call it a creditor here. I'm saying it's also a predator. Bleeds us of all self-sufficiency to and all will to resist its demands. Once this stark fact is accepted, our bankruptcy as going human concerns is complete. And I do want to stop here and say that the big book, hi Rob, I didn't see you come in SJ. The big book, really, it's one of the places that the big book thoroughly covers a step, because the first four sections of the big book, the doctor's opinion, step one, Bill's story, step two, there is a solution, and step three, more about alcoholism. They discuss other, but the main theme running through all four of those sections of the big book is about step one. So if you really want to get a full education on this, on the vagaries of this disease and how we have to approach it and all, there's a couple of case histories in there. There's some really good case histories in the one of the parts of those four sections. I highly recommend everyone read those sections to really get a grasp on step one. This is almost like a summary, because the big book does such a grand job on that. So this is more of a summary than anything else. So going back, starting with the third paragraph. But upon entering AA, we soon take quite another view of this absolute humiliation. We perceive that only through utter defeat are we able to take our first steps toward liberation and strength. Our admission of personal powerlessness finally turn out to be firm bedrock upon which happy and purposeful lives may be built. Yeah. Foundational. The physical sobriety is foundational. There's another part to the foundation, but we'll be getting to that in another step. Physical sobriety is absolutely a foundation to the new lifestyle we are supposed to be trying to build, that has to support physical sobriety. And that's interesting, because as a foundation is supposed to support a structure, right? But this foundation also serves as part of the structure, not only the foundation. So let's say it's the cement, if you will, or something like that, that goes in both the foundation and the structure. So physical sobriety, anything we think we're doing and we're drinking, we ain't making progress, folks. Pardon my slang there with the word ain't. Okay, so moving on, paragraph four. We know that little good can come to any alcoholic, here they're going to support what I just said, who first joins AA unless he has first accepted his devastating weakness and all its consequences. Until he so humbles himself, his sobriety, if any, will be precarious. Of real happiness, he will find none at all. Proved beyond doubt by an immense AA experience, and since AA is now 89 years old as of June 10th this year, we know it's a lot of years of experience, decades, right? Proved beyond doubt by an immense experience, this is one of the facts of AA life. the principle that we shall find no enduring strength until we first admit complete defeat is the main taproot from which our whole society has sprung and flowered. When first challenged to admit defeat, most of us revolted. We had approached AA expecting to be taught self-confidence. Then we have been told that so far as alcohol is concerned, self-confidence was no good whatever. In fact, it was a total liability. You know, and I like to say sometimes people will tell me, because I obviously give the impression when people relate to me or, you know, transact with me, they say, oh, you seem so self-confident. I say, I'm not the least bit interested in self-confidence, God confidence. I want confidence in my higher power. That's where my confidence comes from. That confidence I can depend on. Mine could disappear in a nanosecond. Give me a moment when I'm weak or feeling inadequate to something, confidence goes out the window. And I do have moments like that. So confidence in our higher power is what's more important than confidence in ourselves, I believe. That's my personal perspective. I do want to stop here and say that my perspective, which I will be sharing with you on this, is my perspective. Many people agree with it, but if you don't, if something I say and suggest, if you go, yeah, that just doesn't fit me. That's not how I see things. That's not how I, you know what? I am not offended by that. Everybody's got to find their own grasp of this program. The program is solid. It stays the same. It never changes. But the beauty of it, and I've said this many times, the beauty of it is that it will adapt to fit where we are. If we really want it, it will adapt to fit our personalities and our perspectives. So anything I say is not gospel for everybody. It may be gospel for you and me, but not everybody. So it's okay to disagree with me. Please understand that. I am not offended by that. Yeah, I wrote that. Okay. Our sponsors declare, now we're back in the middle of that, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines down in the second paragraph, on page 22, our sponsors declared that we were the victims of a mental obsession so subtly powerful that no amount of human willpower could break it. There was, they said, no such thing as the personal conquest of this compulsion by the unaided will. That's where God comes in. You know, and I want to say, I'll save that for later. Relentlessly deepening our dilemma, our sponsors pointed out our increasing sensitivity to alcohol, an allergy, they called it. The tyrant alcohol wielded a double-edged sword over us. First, we were smitten by an insane urge that condemned us to go on drinking, and then by an allergy of the body that ensured we would ultimately destroy ourselves in the process. I mean, I've lost a lot of people in my 50 plus years around this program, both directly and indirectly to this disease. Directly meaning that they died from overdose of alcohol. They drank too much and alcohol poisoning killed them. I've lost them that way. Indirectly because of the conditions it recreated. One of them doesn't kill you, but probably makes you wish you can get a wet brain. That means you're psychotic. You're not attached to reality. It ruins your cognitive processes completely. Wet brain, cirrhosis of the liver. Sometimes people are fortunate enough to get a liver transplant if their liver is ruined, but if they keep drinking, they're just going to ruin that one too. There are all kinds of conditions that came strictly from drinking that can kill people. I'm not a medical person, so I don't know all of them, but I'm sure if you Googled it, you could probably find it. What are the medical conditions that can develop from alcoholism? I'm sure you'd find the answers to that. Okay, so let's see. I should make a note of where I stopped. Okay, I think I know where it out in the body. So, near the end, few indeed were those who so assailed had ever won through in single-handed combat. There are a few people who are able to at least physically stop drinking and later came to the program. I knew when I was in my teen sobriety-wise, my home group at the time, let me take a pencil and mark where I left off, so I'm not hunting for it. I knew both a gentleman and a man. They were not related, and a woman. They were not related, and one of them had more time than the other. But they both had gotten sober years, physically dry years before they got to the program and stayed dry. What was interesting, I interviewed them back then, and what was interesting, without knowing it, they both gave me the same reason that they did something. What they had both done was picked their sobriety date as the day of their first AA meeting. And when I asked them why, they said, because I was dry, but I did not have a program going. That's what they both said. And then they felt that all those years of physical sobriety by itself really did them nothing except probably made them more miserable, I would assume. And when they got to the program and found there was a way to deal with life and sobriety that was satisfying, worthwhile, and workable, that was when they felt their sobriety really started. And it's so moving back to the book, it says it was a statistical fact that alcoholics almost never recovered on their own resources. And this had been true apparently ever since man had first crushed grapes. Bill's sense of humor. Now, I have quite a bit of this next section in my book, Circle, because it's critical. Now, oh yes, because this is where I'm going to share a story about myself that relates to this, what we're reading, and is important and something to pass on to others. But I'll start and get to point. It says, in AA's pioneering time, none but the most desperate cases could swallow and digest this unpalatable truth, the truth of who cares to admit complete defeat and you're a disaster when you get here. Even these last gaspers often had difficulty in realizing how hopeless they actually were. But a few did. And when these laid hold of AA principles with all the fervor with which the drowning seas life preservers, they almost invariably got well. That is why the first edition of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, published when our membership was small, dealt with low bottom cases only. Many less desperate alcoholics tried AA but did not succeed because they could not make the admission of hopelessness. Now, it is a tremendous satisfaction. I always get goosebumps when I read this. It is a tremendous satisfaction to record that in the following years, this changed. Alcoholics who still had their health, their families, their jobs, and even two cars in the garage began to recognize their alcoholism. As this trend grew, they were joined by young people who were scarcely more than potential alcoholics. They were spared that last 10 or 15 years of literal hell the rest of us had gone through. Since step one requires an admission that our lives have become unmanageable, how could these people such as this take this step? Now, and I wanted to stop and pause and share my story with you. So I stopped at a very, very high bottom place, a very barely potential. So how, I have a thing I say. So I've only been drunk about 10 times in my life, never had a blackout, never had a driving under the influence. I stopped drinking before I became obsessed or addicted to alcohol, obsessed with or addicted to alcohol. So when I let that sink in, I know I've shared this at meetings many times. I know that the first question that pops into everybody's mind is because it's logical. Well, how do you identify as an alcoholic? Let me explain that to you. How does that happen, Shelley? Well, I came in for my eating disorder, which I'm still working on because it's a moderation discipline and it's a lot harder than if I could stop eating and never have to eat again, I would have perfect sobriety in that too, trust me. But I'm still a work in progress. I shared a little bit of that with all of you previously, but I'm not going to trouble you guys with that. And I'm a totally addictive obsessive personality. A lot of that has to do with child abuse, severe child abuse I suffered. And the damage from that made me need to constantly fix my pain. And how do I not have to feel this, you know? So by the time I got to the program, I had been looking for answers for years. I knew I was messed up. I knew I was addictive and compulsive and obsessive. I was looking for answers. I am a born-again Christian. And in those days, the church didn't know what to do with me. They just pat me on the back and say, well, just do it, dear. Yeah, but how, right? I learned all the principles, the spiritual principles we learn in AA. I had learned in church, but nobody knew how to help this crazy, crazy mind and messed up person how to do it. So I'd been looking for answers. I'd been getting pretty discouraged. And so when I got to AA, it took about 3 weeks worth of meetings for me to finally go, oh my goodness, I felt like I'd come home. Because not only here, at that time, it was 1969, not only were there, as far as I knew, at least thousands of people who were like me, but they had the answers. Thank you, God. And truly, this is where I found them. And so I was going to OA meetings at the time. I don't go anymore. I work my AA program and all my problems. That's just me. I was going to OA, and because AA was a very young recovery fellowship and had no recovery in it yet, almost everybody that was serious about their program went to AA meetings as well, so we could hear recovery talked about, right? As a matter of fact, I remember one time we had a speaker meeting and they invited a sober AA to come share because we had no people who had their eating disorder in order yet, you know? Anyway, and so I listened and listened. And of course, I read my OA didn't have its own book. So our books were the AA books, the big book and the 12 and 12 that we're reading now. And from chapters 2 and 3 in the big book, especially, because they are about the disease and the case histories, and really, and hearing everything after about 1 year and 11 months. I remember I was sitting in my sponsor's kitchen one day. It was just the two of us, and I was sitting there in a state of numbness because of a crisis that I was trying to get through at that moment in my life. And she was puttering around in the sink, and I said, Corinne, I said, you know what? I said, I really identify with those alcoholics. I said, I really want to raise my hand and identify as an alcoholic. But she knew my story by then. She'd been working with me for almost 2 years, right? So she came and sat down. We had to figure out when my last drink, which was almost 3 months prior, because I was scared because what I was hearing, I was scared to drink. It had been a wedding present of a bottle of champagne at my wedding. By the way, that marriage only lasted 10 days, and I won't go into that. But anyway, it got me. And she said, let's do it. We figured out when my last drink was, and I have not had one since. Now, to me, why did I stop at that point? What was my reason? Because I knew that I am so obsessed, addictive, and compulsive that, and none of my addictions have ever been low bottom, the ones I followed through all the way. I knew everything I've ever gone to has had a low bottom, all of it, even to this day. If I'm where you guys, I've shared with you in our regular meetings, you know, I'm working on sobriety, and I still have it in my digital entertainment addiction, which was keeping me up 24/7 doing nothing else, right? So I always go low bottom. I'm an extremist. And what I learned and realized was if I kept drinking, I was going to wind up being a low bottom if I survived it and if I didn't take my life in the process. So it was a perfect time for me to stop. So that bottom had been raised all the way up to this barely potential alcoholic. And I could see that if I kept on drinking, because this disease is progressive, it progresses even when you're sober, it doesn't stop moving forward. If I drank now and survived it, I would very maybe it might take a few weeks. I would be very quickly at all the I would skip right through all the stages. I would go low bottom very quickly. I'd be drinking around the clock. There's no question in my mind about that. So how, you know, do you have to wait till you're in really bad shape to stop? You do not. If you can identify. So let me go on, because now I have a very humorous personal story to share about my final comment on I'm about where I am when I hit my bottom. So I was talking to my mother one day, who I've shared was a psychopath. She murdered my dad with her nursing and got away with it. That's all I'll tell you about it. It took me 63 years to figure out. See, at 63 years of age to figure out she was a psychopath. But this is long before then. And so she was retired and living in my mobile home with me at my invitation. And we were sitting playing a board game one day, and conversation. She asked me a very reasonable question. She said, I don't remember what brought it up, but she said, you know, she said, I don't understand why you call yourself an alcoholic. She said, I never saw you drink that much. I said, you're absolutely right. I didn't. I got up from there, went in my bedroom, and brought in this 12 and 12 and read her the last three paragraphs I just read to you about the bottom being raised and blah blah. I said, see, that last one is me. I said, I wasn't that young. I said, I was 30 years and 7 months old when I had my last drink. I said, but that's me. I said, that's how I call myself an alcoholic. And in her very most snarky way she could, she said, well, if you say so, just like that, really nasty. And I was thinking of all the people in AA, and I have been persecuted. I've had friends, good friends, both male and female, who were low bottom, who said they didn't believe I was an alcoholic because I hadn't drank enough. So I'm thinking about those people when I'm saying what I finally said to my mother, my favorite exit line. I said, you know, in this tone of voice, I said, you know, I'm really grateful that I don't have to drink myself into the gutter to prove to you or anybody else that I'm an alcoholic. And I walked out of the room. She never brought it up again. And I love, because that's how I feel today. I don't care who doesn't believe me. I believe it. I'm the only one that has to believe it. I drank enough for me to know, this is a poison for me. So I hope that helps anybody who's hasn't lost everything and they're trying to worry, well, did I drink enough? Or, no, you get to stop. If you get to decide if you're an alcoholic, and you get to say when you're ready to stop, if you can, if it's early enough, like it was for me, and you can stop. So it's a really important part of this step. So go on. I don't know. I think I stopped. Can anybody help me? I forgot to mark. Did I stop at the paragraph in the middle of 23 where it says it was obviously necessary? Or did I
No,
read?
you
Did I
pick
read?
up right from there. Pick up
Thank
right
you.
from there.
Thank you for keeping track for me. I always do this. It was obviously necessary to raise the bottom the rest of us had hit to the point where it would hit them, these newer people. By going back in our own drinking histories, we could show that years before we realized that we were out of control, that our drinking even then was no mere habit, that it was indeed the beginning of a fatal progression. To the doubters, we could say, well, perhaps you're not an alcoholic after all. Why don't you try some more controlled drinking? Bearing in mind, meanwhile, what we have told you about alcoholism, and there, one of the stories in the back of the, I think it's the fourth edition of the big book, where a newcomer, the person sharing their story, and they said when they first came into their first meeting, and they were talking about controlling their drinking, and an old timer said to them, if you have to control something, that means it's out of control. You know, you don't have to control something that's not out of control. So that's why when they mention this here, it's funny. This attitude brought immediate and practical results. It was then discovered that when one alcoholic had planted in the mind of another the true nature of his malady, that person could never be the same again. Yes, our favorite line to summarize that is, a head full of AA and a belly full of booze don't work, right? It doesn't work out good. Following every spree, he would say to himself, maybe those AAs were right. After a few such experiences, often years before the onset of extreme difficulties, he would return to us convinced he had hit bottom as truly as any of us. John Barleycorn himself had become our best advocate. Now, this very important question: why all this insistence that every AA must hit bottom first? The answer is that few people will sincerely try to practice the AA program unless they have hit bottom. And then he goes on to explain why, and he's right. For practicing AA's remaining 11 steps means the adoption of attitudes and actions that almost no alcoholic who is still drinking can dream of taking. And some of us, even when we stop drinking, have to fight with ourselves to take them. So then he asks us some great suck you up in the head questions again. Who wishes to be rigorously honest and tolerant? Who wants to confess his faults to another and make restitution for harm done? Who cares anything about a higher power? Some of us are there, let alone meditation and prayer. Who wants to sacrifice time and energy in trying to carry AA's message to the next sufferer? No, the average alcoholic, self-centered in the extreme, and let me stop here and say selfishness, self-centered, self-focusedness is always the core of our problem. That's always, we're very busy thinking about what makes us feel good. and trying to make that be a 24/7 rest of our life proposition. It's not reality. Self-centered in the extreme doesn't care for this prospect unless he has to do these things in order to stay alive himself. Now, I want to talk about hitting bottom because that sounds like a very mystical thing. You know, what is that? What does that mean? There is a very practical definition of hitting bottom. So when we drink or do any other kind of compulsive, obsessive, addictive behavior to fix our feelings, we're trying to self-medicate emotional pain or discomfort of some sort, something that doesn't feel like we want to feel. And hitting bottom means that the pain of our form of self-medication, so in this case, the pain of drinking and what it can bring us to, is now worse than the original pain we're trying to self-medicate. That's what hitting bottom is. And here I'm here to tell you, some people will never hit bottom in their life. Those are the folks that die from this disease or die in the gutter because that was where it took them. Because their original emotional and mental pain for them is always going to be worse than anything drinking, drugs, or whatever does to them. So that's a scary proposition because it sounds almost like we don't have any, you know, I can't say, well, let me, you know, you almost can't decide that yourself. It's a process and you have to hit it and everybody hits it at a different point if they hit it. So is that scary? Yes, this is a terminal illness. It is a terrifying disease. And it, you know, we have to be as serious as a heart attack about it. So you now know what hitting bottom is. Under the lash of alcoholism, we are driven to AA. And there we discover the fatal nature of our situation. I'm so glad he put the word fatal in there. Then and only then do we become as open-minded to conviction and as willing to listen as the dying can be. We stand ready to do anything which will lift the merciless obsession from us. I do want to say a little bit more, and this is covered very well, chapters 2 and 3 in the big book, but I want to say something about it here. You know, we say this is a mental, emotional, and physical disease. I say it's also a spiritual disease, and our literature does say that eventually. But I want to cover the mental part because there are actually two aspects of the mental part. There is the obsession, which is in the conscious mind. Now, when we're obsessed with something, we know we're obsessed. We consciously know because everywhere we turn, it's hitting us. We can't get away from it. Our conscious mind is thinking about it all the time. And that's the part that God chooses to heal in us. Could he heal all of it? I believe he could, but he hasn't chosen to do it so far. The other part is the part that's in our subconscious mind. That is where the insanity of the first drink comes from. And you could be going along, doing nothing, thinking nothing about drinking, having no booze around you. You could be totally just doing your life. And all of a sudden, out of the clear blue, the thought to go get a drink comes up. Where did that come from? That's always there. Occasionally, I went a lot of years without having any of those. But recently, because I'm working on some very core issues in my life, guess what? I had a couple of those pop up again after decades of not having them. I had them in spades my first 20 years of sobriety. I didn't have them before I had decided to identify as an alcoholic and stop drinking one day at a time. But after I identified as an alcoholic, I started having them and had them for the next 20 years, the insanity where they would pop up in clusters sometimes. Oh my goodness, scared the living daylights out of me. I had dreams I'd never had before when I stopped drinking too for the first 20 years. Haven't had any of those yet again, but you know, so there is that subconscious part. And do I believe God could heal that? God is God. He can do any old thing he wants to. Just because he can doesn't mean he will. He hasn't chosen to heal that, but I think that's the hook he keeps us coming back. It's kind of the hook he has in the disease, and he keeps us coming back because we've only got 24 hours remission at a time. Safety from that insanity of the first drink by staying as spiritually fit as we possibly can. So there's that two-part mental, and I did not have the obsession for alcohol. I stopped before I did, but trust me, I've had obsessions for alcohol, so I know what obsession is like. It's miserable. Okay, so it's only a half hour, but I think this is a good time to stop and see if